Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And Landry Locker live at Little Woodrow's Midtown. It is a football Friday, and I tell you what, Clint, when it comes to football weekends, I've been known to hype up football weekends. This is the best football weekend of the year. In fact, it gets started in about 5 hours with a college football game with college football playoff implications. We go to Championship Saturday tomorrow, and then, of course, NFL Sunday.
Yeah, I think I've heard you say that biggest football, my favorite football weekend of the year. I think I've heard
you say
it
about six times a year.
Yeah, it's nice. It's all good. But no doubt, man, look, it's a big time weekend on the college front, big time weekend in pro football. It's coming down to cutting time, and guys, you know, teams are either going to start trending upward and making a run at the playoffs, or they're going to fall by the wayside. And so, big weekend all the way around. And I believe there's some state high school championships going on this weekend in the great state of Texas. My man.
Okay. I'm not an expert on the high school football. I actually draw the line. I'm not a high school football fan.
Okay.
I grew up on it. I played it. I used to go to the quadruple header at Texas Stadium, follow those teams around.
Yeah.
I had to draw a line in the sand now, and I'll let the teenagers do their own thing. As soon as they get scholarships, I'll pay attention to
them. Yeah, okay. I mean, that's fine. I mean, to each their own. I mean, it's a big deal in the state of Texas, and it's a big deal on Friday afternoon. So I can understand where you're coming from, but to all my parents and all the kiddos out there that are living the dream and playing high school football and got a chance to go win a ring in front of grandma and grandpa, best of luck, my man. Best of luck.
And don't be like Tim McGraw in Friday Night Lights. Like if Johnny comes up short, don't be like Tim McGraw in Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. Well, there's that one commercial out there too. We make the team. I got cut.
And then he says, we're a chess playing family. Clint Sterner, Landry Locker live at Little Woodrow's Midtown. Come by. Let's get the weekend started because it's going to be a good one. 7 o'clock, Oregon versus Utah. We're going to get into all this. John McClain's going to join us at 4 o'clock as well. But, I mean, we're going to have to hit the ground running. We're actually going to have to help people out. We're going to have to provide a service, Clint, at 3:20 and just tell people the best ways to consume football because I got a lot of friends who, when there's this much football on, little sluggish Monday going into work.
Yeah, look, that's a great excuse to be sluggish on Monday is because you enjoyed a big-time football weekend. Talking about this weekend, Lock Dog, is there's the lines on these games. There's a couple of them that are 6.5, and everything else is a bigger line. 9.5, 15.5, 28.5 in the ACC championship. I mean, for to be a championship weekend, there's some lopsided lines there, my man.
There is, but you and I both have a line that we like that we're going to put our money on. We'll get into that at 4:20 when John McClain's in the building. 2:20, Clint, I got to tell you, I've been talking about the Tennessee tune-up. Texans, nothing to worry about against the Broncos. Seth Payne said something that has me a little bit concerned. We'll get into that in just a little bit. But I figure since we are at a bar, we are at Little Woodrow's, a lot of people are drinking, I think we should start this show off with the favorite drink of Houstonians. Do you know what that is?
I would go with lean. I'd go with some scissor.
No.
No. No. Purple drink?
No.
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 Coors Light?
No.
No.
That's yours.
Oh, come on,
that's
man.
Yours.
Tequila. Tequila.
Nope.
All right, hell, just shoot. I don't know. Give it to me. What do you got?
Cowboys tears.
What?
That is the favorite drink in Houston. Cowboys tears. Last night, you heard it on Sports Radio 610. Cowboys fall to the Bears. They fall to 6-7. On our sister station out there in Dallas, 105.3 The Fan, Jerry Jones, he does a weekly hit with the KNC masterpiece. Just listen to how this interview started. Jerry's usually keeps his cool, but following last night's loss, the Cowboys owner, not too happy.
What answer do you have for how this team is playing right now?
We're not playing very well.
Are you embarrassed? Are you embarrassed as an organization about how the team is playing?
Get your damn act together yourself. Now we're going to have a good visit this morning, but settle down just a little bit.
I mean, as a Cowboys fan, Jerry,
a lot to go over. Now, go on with your question, but I'm going to give you the answers I want to give you this morning, and I've been traveling all night, and I don't have the patience to jack with you today.
Hey, that is classic. I mean, it's like your grandpa saying, hey, you settle down a little bit now. We're going to have a nice little conversation. He's madder than hell, but he's keeping it cool, calm, and collected. That is classic.
What a disaster. I mean, what an absolute disaster going on. I mean, you played there. You know Jerry Jones.
Yeah, man.
I mean, that there was an absolute disaster. And you and I, we don't agree on everything, but we both agreed that – Jason Garrett should have been fired immediately after Thanksgiving. Yep. So what did you expect going into Chicago yesterday?
Look, here's the deal. Is he should have been fired a couple of weeks ago, and now it's to the point to where I said then, you know, the team needed a shot in the arm, maybe a new face, maybe a new personality leading the team meetings, maybe shake that schedule up a little bit throughout the day and change the times of some meetings and maybe the structure of practice. And you've got a talented group. Maybe that'll allow that. Maybe that'll spark a fire under these guys and get them to take their game to a respectable level of football that you know the Cowboys are capable of doing. And now, fast forward 2 weeks, Lock Dog, there's no maybe to it. There is zero doubt about it that Jason Garrett leading a team meeting with this football team is a bad idea. It's no longer ineffective. Now it has a negative effect. Now guys it's embarrassing. You see it, I see it, Jerry sees it. There's no doubt about it that Jason Garrett sees it when he looks in the mirror, and the team damn sure sees it. It's a crying shame they still got a chance to get in the playoffs, and they're not going to make any moves to change what's going on in Dallas
then. And when it comes to their division, they're in the same shape as the Texans. I mean, it's kind of crazy. The Eagles have to win this week against the Giants to tie in the division, but, I mean, they're only a game up in the loss – or they are a game up in the loss column over the Eagles. It's absolutely outrageous, but we're still going to continue drinking the Cowboys' tears here.
Lock Dog, Jerry's mentioning candidates he's interested in.
Urban Meyer, Lincoln Riley.
And somebody's offensive coordinator.
Clemson's OC.
Clemson's OC. Get the hell out of here. And you got a coach in place that you hadn't fired yet. I mean, you talk about a guy, like if you're Jason Garrett, you've made a boatload of money. You got the city of Dallas at your fingertips. You do whatever you want. You're VIP everywhere you go. You backdoor start. Whatever you want, Jason Garrett has that life in Dallas. What motivation does that man have to go to work right now?
Well, I mean, if you look at him on the sidelines, I've watched every game he's coached the last 10 years. I was in Dallas when he got hired. He looks sick to his stomach. Like, he almost looks – he looks ill. He looks like Jason Garrett – I think this is equivalent of a dog owner having a dog for 10 years, and Jason Garrett's been there for 10 years. And the dog is just – the dog is suffering. The dog is – the dog is not the best anymore. And – the dog owner thinks he's doing the dog a favor by letting him hop along, crapping all over the house, throwing up, having trouble sleeping, not being able to walk, not being able to eat, not being able to drink. So you keep it alive. He needs to take this dog to the pound and put him out of his misery.
Yeah, look, we played Florida in 1997 after they won the national title game, Lock, and they were really good. We were a 4-7 football team. I set a record that week. Wasn't a good one. They sacked me more in one game than anybody in the SEC had ever been sacked. They got sacked 11 times in one game.
Sure, you were sore.
Yeah, it was bad. But my point is like, when I see Jason Garrett's face after a game, I picture myself at halftime of that Florida game looking in the mirror like, man, I got to go back out there. I got to go back out there and get destroyed more. Like, it's a helpless. That's the best word I can describe it. It is a helpless look on his face. When I see him, he has no answers. He has no words. And it's a helpless look like, what do I do? I know what's wrong. We got a very talented team that's underperforming on national TV, and my boss has my replacement in mind already. But how do I get through the next month? How do I change what's going on? And he has no answer. He has no words for this football team.
Clint Sterner, Landry Locker, drinking Cowboys tears here on Sports Radio 610 on a Football Friday presented by Coors Light. Michael Irvin was asked about the situation after the game on NFL Network. This is what Michael Irvin had to say about the chaos going on in Big D.
I've heard Jerry Jones talk about, you know, he doesn't think it's prudent right now to make a decision on the coaching situation. I don't see how you continue down this path when you've seen what was on this football field the last couple of weeks.
But you haven't made any moves
absolutely
prior.
Absolutely. Thank the world of Coach Garrett personally. But I don't know how you continue down this road with what you've seen on the field the last 2 games.
He's Steve Smith down there trying to get it.
Shut up, Steve.
He's trying to put
Sit back, Steve.
He wants to give Garrett an ice up, son. Yeah, look, I mean, you know, when we had Mike on, I guess, what was it, Tuesday?
Yeah.
And I asked Mike, I said, Mike, and I know Mike, I know him personally. I know Mike is and Jason Garrett are friends. And so I led into it with, I don't want to put you in a bad spot because I know you know JG personally, but – would you, and ask him about a different coach. Ask him about Greg Roman in Baltimore. Would he be a head coach? And even Irvin checked up on it, right? He didn't want to say anything. So for him, after that game last night, to put it out there that he thinks that Jerry should make a move means that he's seen enough himself. I mean, he's seen enough to be vocal about it. I think he had seen enough before, but he's seen enough now to be vocal about it on national TV.
Well, he's not the only one. Someone who used to actually go to meetings with Jason Garrett, a guy who started in front of Jason Garrett when he was the third-string quarterback with the Dallas Cowboys, Troy Aikman, now a Fox. He was asked about the chaos going on in Dallas, and this is what he had to say.
I don't know how you come back from this. I really don't, Joe. I mean, hey, we'll go play this week against the Rams, and it's all right out in front of us, and I don't think the players hear that. I wouldn't hear it if I were them, and this is on the players as much as it is on the coaches. I'm not sure I'd even talk to the team this week. I'd just say, let's just go play next week, and you guys figure it out. But the talk is over, and it has been over for a while.
It sounds to me like he's like Aikman's kind of – he's straddling that fence a little bit where it's on the players and it's on the coaches, and there's no doubt about it. And he's in a position as a former player where he's got to straddle that fence. But to me – this is 100% on the coaches, man. I mean, when you look at the game, when you watch the game, when you watch the post-game pressers and you see the visual of Jason Garrett up there, all things are 100% true that you mentioned, Landry, and Wade Smith mentioned it earlier, I think maybe last week, about you can see it in his face, he's cooked. But when I watch the game, Rod Marinelli has a very, very, very talented defense. They're loaded on the defensive side of the football. And they get ran through like mess through a goose. I mean, it is unbelievable how this defense is getting ran through. So Rod Marinelli, his seat needs to be awfully hot, right? And then you flip on the other side of it, and clearly the offense is struggling. They're not putting up points like they're capable of putting up. And I understand that. There's hitches along the way. There's roadblocks along the way in the NFL. But the way that they're using Dak Prescott is absolutely criminal. I looked up some numbers for you, Lock Dog.
Could you interest me in some stats?
Mississippi State, okay? Dak's junior year, 210 carries, 16 carries per game, 12 rushing touchdowns, 75 yards rushing per game. And some people say, well, that's college. No, that's Mississippi State in the SEC West.
You're taking as much of a beating as you would anywhere else.
You bet your ass. His senior year, he lost a little bit of his offensive line, so it wasn't as impressive. 160 carries, 12 carries per game, 10 touchdowns. I mean, you're talking about a guy that is at it. If you look at the tape, right, if you're trying to put a round peg in a round hole and build an offense around your quarterback, all you got to do is go back about 3 years and look at what Dan Mullen was doing with him, and it was running the football between the tackles consistently, right? And doing that, they went to the top of the charts. They got to number one in the country.
They
hovered
been
in the top five
either.
For a couple weeks. Right? They did more with less. If he could do that at Mississippi State, there's no reason to think that he couldn't do much, much more with what the Cowboys have stacked up front with Zeke Elliott, with the group of tight ends, with the wideouts. And so not only are they not scoring, it is criminal how they are misusing Dak Prescott as a quarterback. And if they're going to use him that way and then turn around and pay him $35 million, I'm at a loss. I don't understand what's going on.
And on the other side, you'd mentioned the defense. Sometimes you understand someone's value when they're gone. Leighton Vander Esch might be one of the best linebackers in the league because he's been out, and that defense, despite having all that talent, just doesn't look the same.
Doesn't look the same, man.
But we love drinking those Cowboys tears. It is the favorite drink of Houston. Clint Sterner, Landry Locker, live at Little Woodrow's Midtown. Come by here before 6 p.m. You're going to register to win some Texas Bowl tickets, Big 12 versus SEC, speaking of the SEC, from our friends at Papa John's Houston. And also, you can come by and register and win some Kansas tickets. They're at the Smart Financial Center on December 7th. I got to confess, I was not familiar with Kansas's work, but as soon as someone mentioned a song that I would know from a movie that I love, I was beyond more than familiar with Kansas. Here's where most people have heard Kansas before.
I close my eyes only for a moment. And the moment's gone. All my dreams pass before my eyes in curiosity.
Damn it, Blue is old. That's what old people do, they die. Sorry.
All we are is dust in the wind. You're my boy, Blue!
You know what? Will Ferrell might actually be a good singer. When you can just hear it and you're not looking at his face, Will Ferrell might have actually been a good singer.
Hey, if you can keep me dialed in for about 10 seconds, you're a lot better than I am. That's for damn sure. For the record, that was not the real Kansas. Dust in the Wind is one of their songs.
It's a classic.
And it's a classic, and it is an absolutely beautiful. It's a great group, beautiful song. And that was a great movie.
Come by, register to win those tickets here at Little Woodrow's, as well as tickets to the Texas Bowl. And 7 o'clock, championship implications here. So you can get your football weekend started right off the top, going into championship Saturday tomorrow, and then the Tennessee tune-up on Sunday.
Stop it, man. Damn it.
Or is it, Clint? Because Seth Payne said something today that has me questioning my notion that Sunday's game is a Tennessee tune-up. I want to get your takes on this. And I also want to get Clint's keys to the game. That's next.
It's a whole new set of challenges. It's more about the second time through the routine of preparation, pregame warm-up, how you break the huddle, all those things. Those are the things that we're continuing to get better at and evolve at the finer points, and that's what he has to continue to improve on as a player in this league. And then, you know, the Texans are going to present a whole different set of elements for him. So that alone is the variable.
Figgy, can I hear that one more time? Can you replay that at the drop of a hat for me?
It's a whole new set of challenges. It's more about the second time through the routine of preparation, pregame warm-up, how you break the huddle, all those things. Those are the things that we're continuing to get better at and evolve at the finer points, and that's what he has to continue to improve on as a player in this league. And then, you know, the Texans are going to present a whole different set of elements for him. So that alone is the variable.
It's the Denver Broncos offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
It's Rich Scangrillero.
It's D with ears to me.
Coach Skang is what I'd call him. I'd call him Coach Skang.
That's the guy calling plays?
That's the OC.
That's the guy calling plays.
Did I hear him right, Lock Dog? Did he just say that
he's got to learn how to break the huddle?
Okay, so everybody out there listening, this is a real thing. This is a real thing. The offensive coordinator for an NFL football team, a Super Bowl winning football team, right?
A while ago.
Well, I mean, but they've won one, right? I mean, it's a respectable organization.
They've won three.
It's a respectable organization. He just and what week is this?
This is week 14.
14, and you probably had one bye. So you've had 13 games, and you literally just said that your second-round draft pick, who is a starting quarterback, is working on breaking the huddle, getting the play called, and getting to the line of scrimmage.
And pregame warm-ups. If there's anything a third-string quarterback should be good at, you know this, Fudge, it's pregame warm-ups.
Ain't no doubt. I can warm up like a bad mocha. Hey, look here. I'm telling you, boy, I can warm up with the best of them. Lock Dog, I warmed up so good in Seattle one time. I was a third-string quarterback. And it was raining a little bit, and I could throw it in the rain. Now, I don't know why, but I don't have huge hands, but I got better grip when it's a little misty.
Baytown skills.
Coach, I threw that thing so well in warm-ups. The quarterback coach, Wade Wilson, bless your soul. He comes over and he says, Clint, if we make a move in the locker room, you think you can start this game? He's dead serious. He scared the hell out of me. I was like, wait, no. Let me throw a couple bad balls. Because the other cats couldn't throw it in the rain. But you got to be – so I was a master warm-up. I could warm up with the best of them now. So everybody out there understands. We get so caught up in and take for granted what the Texans are doing. There are other NFL franchises that are out there, and the offensive coordinators talking about their quarterback needs to get better at pregame warm-up and breaking the huddle.
Bro,
come on, man.
That's why I'm telling you. Like, I was in the lab before the show today, and I was just going through seeing what they were saying. He didn't say anything interesting, but they asked him what the key is for Drew Lock to follow up on last week, and he said that, and I was like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, that ain't it right
there.
That's
a Tennessee tune-up right there. You're coming on my side now.
No, I'm not. I'm not doing it. And I don't like you. I still don't like you saying it. I watched some tape this morning again, and I'm going to tell you, if my dude wouldn't have missed, He missed a couple of big throws.
Drew Lock, you're talking about?
Yes, in the first couple of drives versus the Chargers, it wouldn't have been a game. It got out of hand early. And so they used their tight ends well. He can spin it. I don't know why he missed three or four, and according to Big Al Williams in Denver, five. I don't know why he missed so badly on some of those throws. But nonetheless, the point is before I get too far off in the weeds, the point is this. Is that there really are NFL franchises that is what the hell they're hoping to get out of a week of practice.
Week 14
in the NFL
week
season.
Week 14. Those two things just seem like something that a third-string quarterback should know.
Can I tell you a quick story about what went on in Miami when I was out there?
Tell me a story.
Coach, I come back from Europe. Miami picked me up, sent me to Europe. I come back to training camp. We're playing the Redskins the first week of preseason. They had just paid A.J. Feely $7 million to be their starting quarterback. He was the next coming. Jay Fiedler was there, but for whatever reason, they were always trying to get him out. And A.J. Feely played a couple of games in Philadelphia and as a backup and ended up making some money in Miami. Anyway, he takes the field, and scat right protection. It's a basic protection. Everybody in football knows it. They know what it is. Well, he is protected, and Sean Taylor, he thinks he's protected, and Sean Taylor literally, if it was 2019, Sean Taylor would have got fined $100,000 for this hit in preseason on the starting quarterback, the franchise's next
Sean Taylor would have played for free these days.
Ooh, he's a monster, but he was a monster. Come to find out, Lock Dog, the OC and the quarterback coach didn't like each other. They had personality conflicts. They were not talking the entire week of preparation before the game, and it almost got the franchise quarterback. They just paid $7 million. It almost got him killed on game day. It was a mix-up because the OC did not tell the quarterback coach to tell the quarterback that he was hot versus that certain look because they had off-the-field problems.
See, I was feeling really good about the Texans yesterday, and I felt even better when I heard the offensive coordinator say that, to the point where I was almost going to double down on the Tennessee tune-up. But as I was listening to Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast this morning, their final segment of the day, Seth said something that scares the crap out of me. And I think maybe you can relate to this, but he said something about Bill O'Brien leading into this game against the Broncos that has me worried, and I think there's a lot of Texans fans that might feel the same way. Here is what Seth said this morning that has me questioning if this is going to be the Tennessee tune-up after all.
The thing that worries me this week is I can tell he's got that look in his eyes. Bill O'Brien really wants to establish the run. I want to make this three tight end thing work. I want to establish the run. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when you really, really want to establish the run, you beat a team that you should crush by 1 point at the end
of
the game.
I'm terrified, Clint. Because I've heard you say that this team might not just be built. I know you want them to run the rock, but they might just not be built as a team that needs to force a square peg in a round hole. Nope. Up the middle. This scares me when Seth says this, because he's been covering this team since B.O.B. was here. And it scares me based on what B.O.B. has said, based on what I've heard Carlos Hyde said. I do not want this to be a situation where you just force the run, spread it out, and throw all over their ass.
What about what I said to you yesterday for four damn hours? And hell, I got Justin Reed calling you an idiot, and you still didn't buy it. It took Seth saying something. Here's the deal. Here's the deal is you are 100% right. And let me explain that a little bit, Locke, is that the Texans are not a football team that can force the run. When you say force the run, when you hear Seth Payne or Wade Smith talk about forcing the run, right, it's – if the defense is putting an extra defender in the box to stop the run, there are some teams in this league that can still run and still make hay and stay in second and third and short even with that defender in the box, whether that's because they move the line of scrimmage off the snap and it's hard for that linebacker, that safety, to get through, or maybe you have a back that's shifty enough to make that free defender that's in the box make him miss more times than not, and he goes and gets a nice little game. The Texans aren't one of those teams, okay? I mean, Carlos Hyde, I love him. He's a great back. I think it's a great pickup. He's not one of those guys that's going to consistently make the extra defender miss. He's not that guy. It's just the fact of the matter. And so I agree with Seth from a standpoint of do not force it. Try to establish it. Just like last week, they tried to establish it. It didn't work out, so they go to their little pass games to the tight ends and to the backs, and everything's gravy. You just keep moving. You put points on the board.
Doesn't it seem like they always try to establish it, though? I think we're kind of talking our way into this because we talk about their slow starts, and it does seem like a lot of times a team that's had 3 points all season long on opening drives, and we've been talking about what's going on, doesn't it seem like their goal maybe – is always to try to establish the run, and sometimes it just doesn't work?
I think that's a general, national, overall, like just football 101. I think at every level, I think every coach is going to tell you we want to establish the run out of the gate. And that's the right way to go about it, Locke, because what you if you can, that's a big if, but if you can establish the run out of the gate, then all the other stuff just comes by the wayside. I mean, all the other stuff just comes so simple, right? I mean, if you can establish the run, right? The Texans have struggled mightily establishing that run. And I just – you can't force it. In an attempt to establish it, I feel like the Texans force it early. Instead of, hey, if they get an extra hat in the box, then get the game on the edges. Get the ball outside to one of these – receivers, find a way to get it on the edges instead of trying to pound it up in there. The Texans are not a force the run football team. They're not a 4-minute offense with their run game. They're great if you sprinkle some RPOs and some quarterback run in there, okay? But you're not going to just establish the run and force the run with Carlos Hyde.
B.O.B.'s got that look in his eyes. It's still a Tennessee tune-up, but I'm a little bit concerned about that. We'll get more into that as the day goes on. But before, I want to shout out to the blue chip of the intercom staff, Mega 101, Spanish station of the Houston Texans. They got their 9th annual Radiothon. It's going to benefit the Texans Children's Hospital. If you're interested in contributing, you can visit Mega101FM.com. All money collected stays local to help the kids of H-Town. Texas Children's Hospitals never turns down a child, regardless of financial status. So support Mega 101. They are second to none when it comes to helping the community. Mega101FM.com to help out the kids of Houston. There you go, Figgy. Hit me with the numero uno. John Elway. A long time ago, there was a lot of drama surrounding John Elway. We also know about Tim Tebow. There was Tebow mania, and there was also something that happened to the Denver Broncos that I think should have us thinking forward about J.J. Watt. Let's go back in time and remember some of the best things to happen to the Denver Broncos back in the day. Reliving the sights and sounds next. And Landry Locker, we are live out here at Little Woodrow's Midtown. Come by, say hi. It is going to be a crazy football weekend starting at 7 o'clock, a game with championship implications. It's going to lead into Championship Saturday, and then, of course, Texans versus Broncos at noon right here on Sports Radio 610. We're going to go through the entertaining history of the Denver Broncos because before they were just a tune-up for the Tennessee Titans, they had a nice little history. We're going to go through it, but before we do that, Clint Sterner, do you have any keys for us? I want to go through your keys to the game.
Absolutely.
He has four. Let's start with number one, Figgy.
It's pretty simple. We've been talking about it. Look, we have discussed this on every show on Sports Radio 610, Houston Sports Leader, multiple times, I believe, for probably about 8 weeks now. The opening drive, the very first drive for the Houston Texans offense, it's been a problem for way too long. It's completely unacceptable. There's been 12 opening drives this year, 68 plays, 150 yards, 8 punts, 3 turnovers. Wait for it. 3 points. There's been as many points as there have been turnovers. You hear the head coach talking about establishing the run. This first drive is critical because of the struggles of the past, obviously. And at some time, Locker, that's going to bite him in the ass. So far, because of Hopkins and Watson and the big playability and the dominance of the defense versus the run and yada, 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 they've been able to overcome it. But at some point in time, that first drive is going to mean something. Pay close attention to it this week because it's the 13th week that they've struggled. And even more importantly, pay closely attention because the head coach, as Seth Payne said this morning, he sees it in his eyes. He is going to establish the run. So that first drive is even more important.
That is key number one.
Two, Carlos Hyde, baby, Carlos Hyde. And it's tied to what I just mentioned about Seth Payne and him believing that Bill O'Brien wants to establish the run. We talked about it last segment, Locker, where if you've got a guy that can make that extra defender in the box miss, if you can make him timid, you know, steal his heart initially because you put your helmet in his chest and you chatter his teeth, right? I mean, something along those lines. If you can really establish the run in 2 and 3 and 4 yard increments, then you can really control this football game. I think Carlos Hyde is key, mainly because the head coach is going to establish the run. But more importantly, you got big boy, big defensive end, Wolf. What's his first name? You remember his first name? The big DN for Denver. He's out. He's done. Derek He's done Wolf. For the year, right?
Yeah, you go.
And then you turn around, you got Von Miller with a bum knee, right? You want to run right at him. You want to be physical with him. Thirdly, this secondary is pretty good. This is number 5 team in the league versus the pass. They haven't gave up a lot of points. And so where you want to hit them is on the ground. It's where they're vulnerable. Right, it's where they're hurting because of injuries. So there's no doubt about it. Watch the first drive, and my number 2 is Carlos Hyde. He's key this game. He's got to get downhill and commit for 4 quarters.
God, I'm scared as hell.
But don't let it scare you, baby. Don't let it scare you.
Scared as hell of running Carlos through a brick wall, but we'll see. That's the offensive side of the rock. The first 2 keys. Number 1, the opening drive. Number 2, Carlos Hyde. Let's get to number 3.
Pretty easy. I think you saw last week what this secondary is capable of doing. This secondary took Edelman completely out of the game after the first drive in critical situations. I believe that this secondary, they have to show multiple looks pre-snap and change them post-snap. So I think multiple looks by this secondary. Last week it was versus the GOAT and to take Edelman out because they've got tremendous chemistry. This week it's multiple looks to a young quarterback and a young receiver that typically that formula, if you give them multiple looks and if you confuse them, will end up with cheap turnovers. Third down, 3 and outs, that kind of thing. So multiple looks on the defensive side of the football, particularly from the secondary, I think is key this week.
And that's if Drew Lock can break the huddle, right?
Come on, that's if, yeah. Now we know he's breaking, worried about breaking the huddle and warm-ups. Hell, that key's even bigger.
If you're just tuning in, the offensive coordinator for the Broncos, what's his name again?
Scrangarello, something like
his
that.
His name is D with ears to me. he said that Drew Lock needs to learn to break the huddle in week 14 of a season. So you got the first 3 keys. What is the 4th key to the game, Hot Fudge?
Well, here's a – sorry about that. I didn't mean to speak over you right
already,
there.
Already.
Here's the deal. That'd be Quattro, wouldn't it? Why was that one in English?
We mix it up. We're a diverse show.
Cool, I got you. We're I like it. Show. I like it, baby. My 4th one is Lindsey, Philip Lindsey, the running back. He's going to be a monster. So I believe this. I believe I changed it on
you
the script.
You said 5 yards a carry, right?
Yeah, 4.7. I changed it off the script. So I'm going rogue here, right? Is B-Mac, right, and Zach Cunningham. I love Zach Cunningham. I love Zach Cunningham's ability to cover outside on receivers and tight ends and running backs in pass routes. This week, I need Benardrick McKinney, when he's at the linebacker position and not rushing the passer, and I need Zach Cunningham. So the inside linebackers, they have got to make sure they punish Philip Lindsey. I'm telling you.
Oh, they can, though.
Coach, I watched some film
B-Mac can punish
hey,
some people.
Look here, Lock Dog. I watched some more film this morning, man, and that dude is nasty. He's shifty. He's north and
but
south.
He's little.
He can get outside.
He's little.
But, hey, look, he's survived, and he's banging right now. 4.7 per carry. This offensive line ain't too shabby now. They're young, but they're not too shabby. So I really think that you got to get different looks in the secondary for Courtland Sutton and Drew Lock. And I believe that the inside linebackers, Cunningham and Benardrick McKinney, they've got to punish Philip Lindsey. You're going to get a heavy dose of Philip Lindsey. You're going to get a heavy, heavy dose of him, all things considered. Those two middle linebackers, they've come up big all year long.
Right.
They got to play big this Sunday.
There we go.
That's it.
That's Clint's 4 keys. Let's go down memory lane. Landry Locker, Clint Sterner live at Little Woodrow's Midtown. The Broncos didn't always suck. I say they suck. Clint doesn't want to say it. He wants to respect them. But they're a 4-8 football team. But they got a nice little history. A nice entertaining history, and I put together a trip down memory lane of the Denver Broncos, and it all started in the 80s with a draft selection that wasn't even one that they made.
Baltimore selects as the first choice in the draft quarterback John Elway of Stanford.
Now, the Baltimore Colts select John Elway, but we all know how the story goes. He did not want to go there. He threatened to play baseball for the New York Yankees. Must be nice to be that good of an athlete to where that is your threat. I went back and I dug up some sound from the drama going on there. And here is John Elway in his own words talking about why he didn't want to play for the Baltimore Colts.
We had been in discussions with him 2 and 3 months before the draft that I was not going to play in Baltimore, that if that came to it, I was going to play baseball for the Yankees, and I was fortunate to have an option.
I want to give myself the best chance to be the best quarterback that I could, and I looked at that organization and what they were doing, and I didn't think that that was going to give me the best chance to show off my talent. Not show off my talents, but to win a Super Bowl. I was looked at as bucking the system, but I was actually the first guy to have a choice, to do something else. So I guess that's why I became notorious in that way. But, you know, it's turned out to be the right move.
It damn sure turned out to be the right move.
In a big way, my man went and won a few Super Bowls, and now he's running the whole damn team.
Yeah. And he's probably drinking as we speak, which we are right here at Little Woodrow's.
What'd you say, hitting, drinking? What were you fixing to say?
I mean, he's drinking, and who knows? I don't know what else he's doing. I don't know. Hitting? Maybe.
I didn't know if you were talking about hitting baseballs, or I didn't know what kind of hitting you were talking
about. Baseballs. Who knows what he's hitting? I just know he's hitting the bar. You know the interesting thing about this with John Elway? Behind the scenes of this whole drama with the Colts, there was a promise that he made to the Colts organization before they traded him. They had a deal in place. And the deal was that he couldn't badmouth the coach. He couldn't badmouth the organization. And they had to find an excuse for him to go public with so that it could save face of the Colts. Now, it kind of backfired on John Elway because the excuse he came up with made him look Hollywood as hell. Here's what the excuse they came up with that didn't fit too well with John Elway as he entered the National Football League.
I think I just came up with the idea, why don't we just say he's from Los Angeles and played at Stanford and really wants to play professionally on the West Coast. And everybody said, yeah, that's fine. I mean, it wasn't unbelievably well thought out.
Why do you want to play the West Coast? What are the reasons?
Well, first of all, I don't like cold weather. I've lived there before.
The excuse ended up backfiring on me, too, because it made me look like a, you know, Cali Golden boy from California, the little surfer dude that wanted to play out in the warm weather.
So he doesn't want to play for the Colts, but he's not allowed to say it publicly, so he has to go out there and basically make himself look soft as hell, Clint. And you know, whenever someone comes into the league and looks soft as hell, who takes exception to that? The veteran players.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
The veteran players took exception to that, and there was a Super Bowl champ, you might recognize him now, by the name of Terry Bradshaw, who heard this excuse from John Elway that wasn't even real, and Terry Bradshaw at a charity golf tournament in anticipation of John Elway being traded from Baltimore had this to say about the future quarterback of the Denver Broncos.
Proving to them, everybody, that I was worthy of being the first draft choice was what inspired me to go on and do the things that we've done. And for a guy like Elway to come and say, well, I want to be on the West Coast and I want to be on the beach and I'm a California boy, well, who cares what you are? You know, and he said, well, I'll play baseball. Play baseball. You should play baseball. Because in my opinion, he's not the kind of guy you win championships with. He never did it when he was at Stanford. I don't think he'll do it at Denver. Personally, don't care if he ever does it.
Is Denver on your schedule next year?
They are, and we're going to kick the dog out of them.
Terry's one of the best. He's getting a little loose with it in his old age, but Terry's one of the best, man.
It seems like he was pretty loose at his younger age as well. So we know how this ended. John Elway talks his way out of Baltimore, and then finally he won a Super Bowl. And the late Pat Bowlen was at the podium, and he said this famous line.
The thing I want to say here tonight is only four words. This one's for John.
That was after the Broncos beat the Packers. They went on to win another Super Bowl over the Dirty Bird Falcons. John Elway rode off into the sunset. That was John Elway. However, there was another polarizing quarterback that you're familiar with, played in the same conference as you. Didn't have the amount of success that Elway had, but he might have generated the same buzz. Let's go back to the 2010 NFL draft. Josh McDaniels, now the offensive coordinator for the New England Patriots, then the head coach for the Denver Broncos. He made a controversial draft choice.
And with the 25th pick in the 2010 NFL Draft, the Denver Broncos select Tim Tebow, quarterback, Florida.
And then we remember Tebow Mania, won a playoff game over the Steelers, however, just wasn't quite enough. But it was a fun time to watch, and it was fun to watch Tim Tebow for better or worse.
Very fun to watch. Think about it if he was in 2019 coming out with these offensive-minded coaches, all of a sudden building offenses around, schemes around their quarterback. I don't know that Tim would ever be able to throw the football the way that, say, a Lamar Jackson could throw it or some of the other guys that are these true dual-threat guys are. But it would be interesting to see how a true QB power run scheme could possibly work. I know they did some of it with Tim in Denver and then even, I believe, in New York, right, with the Jets,
Yeah, they tried to play him at fullback and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so they tried to do some different things with him. But I think it's no surprise that Tim Tebow did not work out in Denver. I was blown away when he got drafted as early as he did.
Yeah, he got drafted in the first round, and, man, it was fun. But it wasn't good enough for the Denver Broncos, so they decided to bring in one of the greatest of all time. Peyton Manning had been injured. He'd missed the previous season. There was a lot of buildup as to where Peyton Manning would end up. But at the end of the day, as we go through the history of the Denver Broncos, Peyton Manning chose Denver. They ended up winning a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning. This was him on NFL Network with Rich Eisen talking about why he decided to go with the Denver Broncos.
The Broncos were very upfront, honest with me the entire time. Coach Fox and John Elway answered all of my questions, gave me the direction of their future, of their organization. And like the other decisions I've made in the past, I decided to make it and not look back and to go from now and make it the right decision. And so I have to go to work to make it the right decision to be a Denver Bronco. And I know John Elway and Coach Fox and Mr. Bolin are going to help me in that process.
Man, there was a lot of possibilities. There was the Titans. I mean, I know the Texans were even coming up. A lot of people were talking about there was a rumor they didn't want to go to the NFC because he didn't want to play Eli if they went to the playoffs. But they got Peyton Manning. They got that ship.
Coach, Peyton Manning is in a league of his own. I don't want to get into the conversation of the GOAT, the greatest ever, because I got different categories for that when I start talking quarterbacks. But Peyton Manning is in a league of his own, my brother, the quarterback position. When it comes to being a quarterback and an offensive coordinator, I mean, the responsibilities that he had on the offensive side of the football when he was quarterback, and I don't know that we'll ever see another quarterback do that.
I mean, they set the league on fire that one year before they ran into Seattle in the Super Bowl. I mean, they were humming that season. One more memory as we go down the history of the Denver Broncos. And I think this is something to think about locally here, because we know that John Elway won his two Super Bowls, but on the defensive side of the ball, there was a missing piece that the Broncos landed that helped them get those Super Bowls. Let's go down memory lane and talk about that missing piece.
Smith, who spent 9 years in Kansas City chasing and often catching quarterbacks, he made the Pro Bowl five times, will take his sack attack to Denver next season. CNNSI's Peter King reports that Smith will sign a two-year deal with the Broncos on Monday.
Neil Smith, five-time Pro Bowler, 32 years old, decides to go somewhere else to get over the hump. J.J. Watt, six-time Pro Bowler.
Stop it.
I'm just saying, Clint.
I mean, golly, man. You're killing me over here, Smalls. Come on, man.
Hey, I'm just saying it happens.
I didn't know that's where you were going with
I'm just
that. Neil Smith
it happens.
Is an absolute monster, no doubt about it.
He used to do the home run swing after the sacks.
I loved it, man. But look here. There ain't no way in hell J.J. Watt is leaving Houston. He started his career here. He's going to end his career here. There is no way in hell that J.J. Watt leaves Houston.
I just bring it up because similar situation.
I'm just setting you straight. It ain't happening.
Sometimes it ain't his choice. It ain't the team's choice. Sometimes he just wants to get over that hump.
I'm just here to tell you it ain't happening.
Okay. Clint Sterner, Landry Locker, live at Little Woodrow's Midtown. Come by. Register to win tickets to the Texas Bowl. We also got tickets to see Kansas. They're coming to the Smart Financial Center. You don't want to miss that. That's something you take a date. Yeah, that's you don't take just some swamp donkey there. You got to take someone you want to hold hands with and sit in the stands with.
That's right. No swamp donkeys. That'd be a bad deal.
That's how you get it. Well, it would be. Sometimes it's a good deal, but not in this situation.
Yeah, no, that's it right there.
Not in this situation.
Just relax. Take your deep breath and listen to that right there. You can win tickets, right?
You can win tickets. Come by here, register before 6 o'clock out here at Little Woodrow's Midtown. Kareem Jackson, he spoke yesterday. He spoke about returning to his old home.
Yep.
We've been talking a lot about Kareem, but Snoop Dogg's friend might actually have more of an impact on this game, and he has revenge on his mind just as much as Kareem. I'll tell you why next. Crumbles to the ground, though we refuse
to see. T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.